Good to be up here this morning to preach to you guys. We're having a little problems with our microphone, so I'm just going to have to speak a little louder, and I hope you can all hear me out there just fine. So I'll do my best to yell, so to speak. Before I get into our lesson, we're going to be talking about wrestling God. You know, this is a sure sign of our faith. And that's the title of the lesson. And this morning, I'm going to pull a Joe Stuvey on you because Joe likes to ask a question when he begins every sermon. So I'm going to do the same thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. Joe does a good job, and we all appreciate his work and his efforts. So, but I'm just kind of poking fun at him. But I want you to imagine yourself in a hypothetical situation, okay? Pretend that you, you alone, are in a room with God, okay? Now, this is purely hypothetical. Now, if you find yourself and you can see God, you can rest assured that it's probably Judgment Day. But we're not talking about that. We're dealing with a hypothetical here, okay? So a hypothetical is you're in a room with God. It's just you and Him. And the question I want to ask is, what would you do in that situation? You know, you might be like Moses, and you might talk to God, and offer, you know, God may come to you and ask you to be doing something for Him, but you may offer some excuses to Him to do His will. In Exodus chapter 3 and 4, we see Moses offering some excuses. You know, you might be like Habakkuk, in regards to questioning God. Why, God, are you allowing all these bad things in the world to occur? Why don't you just destroy all of humankind? You know, you might have some questions for God along those lines. We're studying Habakkuk in our Wednesday night class. You know, you might be like Jonah, and you might express your anger towards God for allowing people to be saved that you didn't want saved. That's the situation we see with Jonah. But in a sense, what we're talking about is him expressing his anger toward God. So you might be like Jonah. You might be like Peter and rebuking the Lord. Or you might be like Judas and the Jews. You know, if the Lord was here long enough, you might figure out a way to try to betray him or kill him. And, you know, interestingly enough, these hypotheticals today, you know, occur. These hypotheticals occur every day within our lives. And since God is essentially here in the sense that He can see us, according to Proverbs chapter 15, verse 3, and He searches the heart and He tests the mind, according to Jeremiah 17, verses 9 and 10. We're not going to take the time to read those. But, you know, we have a term for that. And I don't think it's a term, depending on your translation, that's in the Bible, but the term is called omnipresence. God is everywhere. He can see everything that we're doing. So it's almost as if God is here and He can see us in everything that we do. And that's true. That's what He does. And so every day in this world, these things are actually occurring. You know, I dealt with them as hypotheticals. You know, you might be like Habakkuk or Jonah or Peter. But in reality, when you think about it, everyone, even Christians today, are offering excuses to God. They're questioning Him. They're expressing their anger towards Him. We recently have seen this with a sister that we're currently withdrawing from, which is an unfortunate event. But, you know, we see this occurring. You know, we see people rebuking Him. And you know what? We hang Him and we crucify Him every time that we sin. So these things still occur today. So we dealt with them as a hypothetical. But those who are wise understand that God does dwell in our hearts. According to 1 John chapter 3, verses 24 through chapter 4, verse 6. Talking about His Spirit dwelling within our spirit. And that's really through our hearts. And that involves a little bit more further study, but we're not going to get into it. And so therefore, we might respond differently because we know these things. And the way we might respond is we might be like Isaiah or Ezekiel in that when we see the Lord, we bow down to Him as if to worship Him. I believe Isaiah and Ezekiel did it because of their fear of the Lord, because of His great power and His majesty. But in a sense, you know, we might do the same, but, you know, by worshiping Him. You know, you might be like Abraham, and you might actually do what God asks of you instead of offering excuses, and you demonstrate your faith by obeying His commands. Or, you know, you might be like Jesus, and trying to present your life as acceptable and holy unto God. This is what we should be doing every day in our lives. You know, it's not that if He comes down a one-time situation that you just do it that one time. You're constantly doing these things. And so in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, we read this passage all the time, but it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable, the perfect will of God. This is what is required of us every day in our lives. But I want to take you to another example of how an individual spent his time with God when God came down on the earth for a period of time, and that is with Jacob. You may already know what situation I'm talking about, but turn over to Genesis chapter 32, and we're going to begin in verse 22. We see Jacob here wrestled with God. And so I'm going to begin reading in verse 22 of Genesis chapter 32. And it says, And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, Let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, What is your name? He said, Jacob. And he said, Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked, saying, Tell me your name, I pray. And he said, Why is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over the Peniel, the sun arose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. So this is a pretty awesome picture. This is how Jacob spent his time with the Lord. When the Lord came down, he wrestled with him. And so we see this wrestling match occurring, and Jacob is actually winning. You know, you wouldn't probably expect that. But this seems like a random event, you know, if you don't take it into context, what's being said. So we're going to have to go back through and look at Jacob's history and try to understand what, you know, was going on here and why he wrestled the Lord. So if we go back, it begins really in Genesis chapter 25. We see that Jacob always wanted to get his way, and who wouldn't, you know? Jacob had to have his way, and he did not rely in his faith on the Lord, and we're going to talk about that. But beginning in Genesis chapter 25, beginning in verse 21, it says, Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together. And that word struggled there means to bruise, to break, to crush. They weren't out to, you know, just have a little wrestling match. It's almost as if they were trying to kill each other while they're in the womb. They were out to harm each other, okay? But the children struggled together within her, and she said, If all is well, why am I like this? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, Two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, and he was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So we see this interesting situation where Jacob comes out of the womb and grabs Esau's heel. You know, I may be reading into this too much, but maybe, just maybe, it might be Jacob trying to say, yeah, Esau, you won the firstborn inheritance, but it's not over yet. I'm hanging in there and I'm going to get you, you know, so to speak. I don't know if that's, you know, the tendency of it, but you know, you never know. I'm just, you know, posing a hypothetical there. But moving on, in Genesis chapter 25, verse 29, we see that Jacob indeed gets his way. And we begin in verse 29, it says, "Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary.' Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, 'Sell me your birthright as of this day.' And Esau said, 'Look, I am about to die, so what is this birthright to me?' Then Jacob said, 'Swear to me as of this day.' So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. And he gave and ate and drank and rose, and he ate and drank and arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright." So Esau gave up willingly his birthright to the inheritance, and he sold it to Jacob. And then, but that's not all. Jacob had to do more in order to get that, and he had to get his father's blessing. So this is where we get into Genesis chapter 27. And we know the story. We're not going to, you know, read everything, but we have to, you know, give you a little bit of context here, that Isaac had poor eyesight in his old age. He could not see, and he could not discern between his two sons, as we're going to see here, beginning in verse 18 of Genesis chapter 27. It says, "So he went to his father and said, 'My father,' and he said, 'Here I am. Who are you, my son?' Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you told me. Please arise, sit and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me.' But Isaac said to his son, 'How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?' And he said, 'Because the Lord your God brought it to me.' Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not.'" Remember, Esau was hairy. "So Jacob went near to Isaac his father, and he felt him and said, 'The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. Then he said, 'Are you really my son Esau?' And he said, 'I am.' He said, 'Bring it near to me and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you.' So he brought it near to him and he ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. And then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come near now and kiss me, my son.' And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, 'Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let the people serve you, and the nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." We know Jacob was a smooth-skinned man. He wasn't hairy like his brother Esau, so his mom cooked him a stew and gave it to him to give to his father, and she put him in Esau's clothing and put him in some skins of or furs, mind you, so he felt hairy to Jacob. So essentially what we have here is Jacob lying to his father. He deceived his father because, once again, he had to get his own way. So he needed actually three things to receive the inheritance of the firstborn. The first is the firstborn's birthright. He needed that to receive the inheritance. He also needed the father's blessing, right? And the third thing that he needed was the Lord's blessing. He couldn't do it without the Lord. So he needed his blessing as well. And so although Jacob received the firstborn son's inheritance, he did it in a manner that was first taking advantage of his brother when he was weary, and secondly, by lying to his father. Okay, so he was getting his way, and he was doing by whatever means possible. So he got what he desired, and indeed, nothing did stop him, even his lack of love for the Lord in that sense, because he was sinning. He didn't have love for the Lord in that situation. And then we're not going to take the time to read all this, so I'm just going to reference it. After that event, after he was blessed by his father, Esau came back in and he had his game. He cooked Isaac, his father, a stew so he could bless him. That's what Isaac wanted him to do, right? So he goes in, and it's too late though at this point because he already blessed Jacob. And he asked Esau, well, who's that man I just blessed? And so now we know the situation that Esau got angry with Jacob, didn't he? And he was seeking to kill him. So because of that situation, Jacob had to flee. And so in Genesis chapter 27, in verses 41 through chapter 28, verse 5, we see that Jacob flees to Padan Aram and Haran to work for Laban. Laban kind of rhymes, you know, not intentional. But then in Genesis 28, though, before he gets to work for Laban, he stops in Bethel to receive the blessing from the Lord. Okay, so now he has all three. He has Esau's birthright, he has the father's blessing, and he has the Lord's blessing. So he has all three. And then in Genesis chapter 29 through chapter 30 and verse 24, during this time we see that while he is working with Laban, he works for his wives, and he worked for a total of 14 years for his two wives, Leah and Rachel, and during that time, he conceived with them, and then he also worked another additional 6 years to work for livestock for a total of 20 years working with Laban. And so he works for livestock, and essentially, we know the story there in that he, Laban gives him livestock, but he tries to cheat him 10 different times. And he said, okay, you can take the speckled lambs, but the rest are mine. And so Jacob would take the speckled lambs, and that's all that they were producing. And then Laban saw that all the lambs that they produced were speckled, so he said, okay, you can only take the streaked lambs. And so then he would have to take all the striped lambs, and then when he, when he said that, then all the lambs thereafter were streaked, and so on and so forth, because after he kept changing the situation, he said, no, you can take these types of lambs or these types of lambs. And each time that he did that, the Lord was with Jacob, and he blessed him and made sure that he got all those lambs, goats and what have you. So then Laban gets angry at Jacob, and once again, Jacob has to flee away from Laban. And we know the story there because Laban runs after him because apparently Rachel stole some idols of his, and he accuses Jacob, and he can't find the idols because Rachel hit him on him. And, then they made a truce. They made a covenant to not harm each other. Okay? So that was the situation, and then we get into chapter 32 of Genesis. And in this situation, 20 years, remember, have passed, and he's coming to Edom. And he knows who's in Edom, Esau, his brother. So what does he do? He sends messengers out to go to his brother Esau, and his messengers come back to tell him that Esau is coming to meet him with 400 men. And now Jacob is deathly afraid because of the situation. Remember the situation that happened. Esau was angry with Jacob, so he goes back, and now he's deathly afraid of his brother and what he's going to do to him. So notice Jacob's response in verse 7 of Genesis chapter 32. It says, so Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape. In his fear, Jacob goes to the Lord in prayer. Notice, in his fear. But it's not in faith. In Genesis chapter 32, verse 9, it says, then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of the mercies of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over the Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me, and the mother with my children. For you said, I will surely treat you well, and make you descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. What made the situation wrong was that Jacob did not have faith. We'll talk about this a little bit more. But is it wrong for us to pray to God if we're afraid of something? No, there's nothing wrong with that at all. So long as we have faith in the Lord that He's going to be able to deliver us. We are commanded to have faith. But due to Jacob's lack of faith in the Lord to deliver him and bless him, essentially, as we already read, he took matters into his own hands and wrestled with God. And we see a condemnation against Jacob in Hosea chapter 12. Go ahead and turn it. We're going to read it. In Hosea chapter 12, the book of Hosea is a very interesting book. If you know you haven't read it, it's interesting because God requires Hosea to marry a prostitute. He wants him to know how it feels, how Israel has been cheating him whenever Israel cheats on him with regards to their idols. Now, we know during this time that the kingdom is divided into the northern tribe, Israel, and Judah, the southern tribe. And so the main message in Hosea is to the northern tribe, Israelites. And he refers to them as Ephraim because that was the main tribe in the northern part of Israel. But he has tidbits of information for the tribe of Judah as well. And we're going to see that. In verse 2 of chapter 12 of Hosea, it says, "The Lord also brings a charge against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. According to his deeds, he will recompense him. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength," notice that word, his strength, it wasn't the Lord's strength, it was his own strength, "he struggled with God. Yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought favor from him. He found him in Bethel and there spoke to us." That is the Lord God of hosts. The Lord is his memorable name. "So you, by the help of your God, return. Observe mercy and justice and wait on your God continually." So Hosea's message here was to the tribe of Judah, but he incorporates Jacob to compare Judah to Jacob. We know that in Hosea that Judah relied in their own strength by worshiping other gods. We see that in Hosea chapter 5, verses 4 and 5. They worshiped other gods, so they relied in their own strength, just as Jacob relied in his own strength when he came and wrestled the Lord, as Hosea indicated here. We also know in Hosea chapter 6, verse 4, that Judah had a weak faith. And in Hosea chapter 6, verse 7, they transgressed the covenant and dealt deceitfully with the Lord. And so if we compare that to Jacob, we see that Jacob worshipped his own desires or gods. Where did his desires lie? It lied in the firstborn son's inheritance. That's where his desires lied. And our desires, and that becomes our God, because anytime our heart's desire is something that we can't have, and we go after it, and something that we can't have, then we're going away from God. So his desire, his heart's desire, was to have that firstborn son's inheritance. And he got it. And he had a weak faith, just as the tribe of Judah did, because of his fear of his brother. We see that in Genesis 32, verse 7. But if you cross-reference that to Matthew chapter 6, verse 30, Jesus even indicated on the Sermon on the Mount, "O you of little faith," in regards to worrying. He's talking about worrying in that context. And worrying demonstrates that you have a lack of faith. So if you have fear, you have lack of faith. I'm not talking about fear of God. I'm talking about the fear of man, which Jacob did fear. So he did not have faith in this situation. Jacob broke the covenant of the firstborn, as only the firstborn had the rights. And he dealt deceitfully with his father Isaac. So he broke the covenant just as Judah broke the covenant with the Lord. He broke the covenant of the firstborn son and his inheritance. That's not the way it was supposed to be. And he broke it by lying to his father. There was a certain protocol and he did not live according to that protocol. So the message here essentially is for Judah to return to the Lord like Jacob returned to Bethel. We're not going to really talk about that. You'll find that in Genesis chapter 35, verse 1. Remember the blessing that the Lord gave to Jacob in that he wasn't going to do anything until, he wasn't going to lead Jacob until he came back to the land of Bethel. And indeed, he kept his word. So although Jacob did have a lack of faith, what he did not lack was a sincerity of heart. There is a difference, brethren. He did not lack a sincerity heart. You notice how Hosea says that he wept and sought favor from the Lord. You know, I'm not sure when he did that. I'm not sure if it was a prayer the day of, the night that he wrestled with God that we see. But we didn't read it. But I'm not sure if it's talking about that particular situation. But we see that he did have a sincere heart because he did weep and seek favor from the Lord. So he knew who to go to, and that's good. But in his prayer, you know, we see also the humility of Jacob as he saw himself as nothing. Remember, to be humble does not mean that you think very little of yourself. It means that you think absolutely nothing of yourself whatsoever. And we see that in verse 10 of chapter 32, when Jacob said, "I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies of all the truth which you have shown your servant." And so in his prayer, we also see Jacob's lack of faith when he had to remind God of the promise that he made to Jacob. This is what Jacob said in his prayer to the Lord in verse 12. He said, "For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." So he had to remind God. He had to remind God because he didn't have faith that God would remember his promise to him. He reminded God. Jacob did have a lack of faith in this situation. But I want to just take an aside to indicate that is it possible that we can learn spiritual truths from those who have done something wrong? And the answer to that is yes. We can learn spiritual foundational truths from those that are evil. Think of others' mistakes. You know, you go through Proverbs chapter 1 through chapter 9, you'll see a father talking to his son, passing down wisdom. He passed down wisdom because he lived through those situations. And, you know, he maybe may have made some mistakes himself. And so he didn't want his son to make those same mistakes. So we can learn from other people's mistakes. You know, you can see also another situation in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31. It says, "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." Now, that situation kind of goes back to Joshua. And like I said, this is an aside, so just bear with me. That kind of goes back to the situation of when Joshua was taking back the land of Canaan. They enter the land of Canaan, and they're fighting all these wars with all the nations that are already dwelling in Canaan so they can take their land that God has promised them. And God is obviously with them. But in this case, it is Jericho, and Joshua sends spies into Jericho to go seek out to look out the city. And Rahab, a harlot, accepts them into her house and hides them. And two messengers from the king of Jericho go to her house, and she lies to them. Okay? She lies to them. Now, the reason I bring this up is because sometimes I think people, out, especially like in the denominational world, might indicate in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, that, oh, Rahab lied, so it's okay for us to say a little lie. What's being commended here is Rahab's faith. It's not the fact that she lied. So we can learn something by her faith. Her faith is what caused her to lie, so to speak. I don't know how else to say that. Because she had faith that they were sent from the Lord, she lied. I mean, she didn't have too many morals. She was a harlot. So she wasn't going to have too many morals. So she lied. And to her, that probably wasn't anything wrong with that. But that was wrong. So what was being commended was her faith, not the fact that she lied. And in Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13, we see a parable of the unjust steward. We're not going to take the time to read it, where we have this dishonest steward, and an accusation is being brought against him that he is dealing deceitfully with his master's funds. And so the master fires him. And while he still has time to deal with his master's funds, he takes that opportunity to go out into those who owed him money and give them a reduced rate to pay him back. You know, for those guys, it was nice. And for him, it was nice because he was preparing for his future. He was taking what he had, the power of, and he prepared his future. So that way, when he got fired, other people would be willing to accept him befriend him because he was helping them out. That's the parable of the unjust steward. But notice what Jesus says in verse 9 of that. And he says, "And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home." Jesus is not telling us to, in that situation, he's not telling us to be unrighteous. He's telling us to learn a principle from those that can be unrighteous. So is it possible that we can learn from those of evil? The answer is yes, we can. And we can learn something from Jacob's situation, even though he didn't have faith. We're talking about faith. We'll see that in a minute. So what is it that we can learn about Jacob's wrestling match with God? Well, there's 3 points I'm going to be making here. So the first point is that we also can wrestle with God just as Jacob wrestled with God. And we see that in verse 24. But I want you to understand before I explain what I mean by that we are wrestling with God. We are not wrestling against God. Wrestling against God is what the world does. Wrestling with God is what Christians need to do. So when we're wrestling with God, it involves seeking after good spiritual gifts and doing whatever is necessary to obtain them. And we saw this in the scripture reading this morning in Matthew chapter 7. In verse 7, it says, "Ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened to you, for everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened." So we are to ask. This refers to begging, requiring a certain fulfillment of a certain craving. And we're talking about spiritual things. We're not talking about physical things. You know, you could pray for $1 million, but that's not what the Lord wants. He wants us to seek after these spiritual gifts. So we are to ask the Lord in faith for spiritual things that the Lord himself desires for us to have. And then we are to seek for what we ask. And this refers to go after something as if you're plotting the course. And in here, we're persevering and we're continuing to strive for the fulfillment of these spiritual longings. And we are also to knock, which refers to rapping or knocking on the door. Quite literal. And so here we're to continue persisting and seeking out our desires regardless of whatever obstacles may lie in our path. So essentially, we wrestle God for the good spiritual gifts that he desires to give us, as he also desired to give to Jacob. And we're going to be talking about that. So we wrestle with God because we desire the same thing that he desires for us. But we're to ask, seek, and knock. We're supposed to do those things. So whatever obstacles lie in our way, we're continually asking and seeking the Lord to get over those obstacles, to get what we desire. And we're talking about spiritual gifts. Just as Jacob desired the firstborn's inheritance, we need to desire the things of a spiritual nature. You know, if we go back to the situation where Jacob was definitely afraid of his brother, and you think about that, if Jacob was killed by his brother, if God allowed that to happen, then his covenant, the Lord's covenant, would not have held true that he gave to Jacob in Genesis 28 verse 15, when the Lord said to Jacob, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." So the word wrestle in verse 24, when we get, going back to wrestling, it actually means to wrestle. It means to grapple. It means, you're on the ground, you're kicking, dusting, whatever it means, you're wrestling. So you're wrestling, okay? And it is actually used in conjunction with the word struggle found in verse 28. I'm not saying that they're the same meaning or that they're synonymous. What I'm saying is that wrestling relates to struggling, and we're going to see how that works. And according to the New King James Version, it says struggle in verse 28, but I don't really like that term. And the New American Standard does even a worse job when it says striven with God. I don't like that either. But what is correct is the King James Version, in which says power with God. So that word struggle there in verse 28 means power with God. Instead of struggling with God, we have power with God. And so that's the actual meaning, but what does that mean? Well, to have power with God, we have to wrestle with him rather than against him. So if we're having power with God, we are wrestling with him rather than against him. Because if we're wrestling against God, we're seeking to have power against God. And that's not right. So that's what the world does. They seek to have power against God. And in the end, they're ultimately going to lose. Now let's get to the second point. What's another principle that we can learn from Jacob's wrestling match? That was kind of, the first point was just kind of to define what wrestling is. But what does God desire for us? He desires for us to win the wrestling match, and he desires that we prevail over him and men as Jacob did in verse 28. So let's break this down. How are we to prevail over God? Well, prevail means to attain, to overcome. And so in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 29, we see that God gives us our strength. It says, he gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. So our strength is found from the Lord. We get our strength from the Lord if we are willing to wait on the Lord, as it says in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. And so essentially what the Lord desires is for us to wrestle with him and to prevail over him, and he is willing to give us the strength to do so. Does that make sense to anyone? I mean, here you have a situation. God desires for us to prevail over him. So we have to get into a wrestling match with God, so to speak. And when I say wrestling, we're not trying to overcome God in the sense of overcoming him with a certain power or anything like that. We're talking about attaining the gifts that he has, that he can bestow upon us, and we can receive from God himself. So that's what we're talking about. I just didn't want anyone to misunderstand what I'm saying. But essentially, the Lord wants us to wrestle with him, and he's giving us the strength to win in this wrestling match against him. That seems a little backwards. You know, it's a good definition of what a good loser actually is. You know, he's definitely not a sore loser. He wants you to win, and he wants you to continue winning. He wants you to have these spiritual gifts that he can give to you. That's what he desires, and he wants you to seek after them and diligently go after them to the point you're essentially wrestling. So turn over to James chapter 1. We're studying James, or we'll be studying it this morning in our class. Beginning in verse 2, it says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and I will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea and driven and tossed into the wind." So we are to have faith whenever we ask God for something. But James here is indicating that God creates trials that test our faith. And we can see an example where God tested Abraham's faith by offering his own son. And we know that situation. And he stopped him before he killed his own son. And so God is ultimately going to test our faith in him, and we need his help to get through the trial. So God is setting it up, so he's testing us through our faith, and we have to get through the trial. But we need his help to get through those trials. So in faith, we ask him for the spiritual gifts to help us through those trials. And so what this really does, it helps us to start to build a reliance upon the Lord. So we're constantly seeking after him in these things. So we're wrestling with God, and we're utilizing his help to prevail. And so the problem here was that, if we go back to Jacob's situation, the problem with Jacob is that it says he used his own strength. He didn't rely on the Lord's strength. He relied on his own strength because he did not have faith in the Lord. But we're not done there. We're going to talk more about it. So in conclusion, in regards to this, not concluding the lesson, but to this thought, you know, to have power with God and to prevail over him simply means that we use his strength, that is, the strength which God has given us, to overcome him in matters where our faith is being tested. He wants us to prevail. So he's willing to do whatever he can for us to prevail over him in regards to receiving these good spiritual blessings that he has, that he can bestow to us when we constantly and diligently seek Him. I'm giving you these examples. I keep repeating this because it might be a little bit difficult to understand because it doesn't make too much sense, but it does. It doesn't make sense in the worldly terms. That is, you can't find an analogous situation, but it does make sense in spiritual terms, and we're going to see that. So we're building our reliance on the Lord during the times of testing, and it will help in the long run when we are truly tempted by Satan himself. We build this reliance, and when we build a reliance on the Lord, we're building our faith in the Lord. So then when a real temptation comes along and the devil is throwing a temptation at us, we can, since we have reliance on the Lord, we can go to the Lord in faith and ask him to deliver us from that temptation. And we can rely on the Lord to fight our battles for us. That's what God wants from us. And so the Lord desires that we prevail over other men as well. So not just over God himself, but he desires for us to prevail over other men as Jacob prevailed. And prevailed really is the end product that we're trying to get to. You see that in verse 28. But it's not that that we're to prevail over other men through deceit or by taking advantage of them as Jacob did. God doesn't want us to sin in the process because this was condemned by Hosea. You know, Jacob had power with men. Remember how that word struggle means power. It says he had power with God and with men. He struggled with God and with men. So he had power with men as well and prevailed over men by using other men's strengths. That is what they had, the power that they bestowed, and they bestowed it upon Jacob. They gave it to Jacob and he overcame those people in the matters of physical things. So essentially, he stripped men of their power by handing their power to him so he would then have the power himself. It's kind of a weird way to think about it. Let's just look at the examples. For example, Esau, okay? Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, and Jacob overcame Esau because Esau gave him his birthright. So in a sense, Esau really defeated his own self. He gave Jacob the power to defeat Esau. Esau gave Jacob the power to defeat Esau. So he overcame Esau by Esau doing that. It doesn't seem to make sense, but it does. We see it with Isaac as well. Isaac gave Jacob the blessing, and that gave him the power, that is Jacob, gave Jacob the power to overcome Isaac. So Isaac took something, took what he had, gave it to Jacob, and allowed him to have the blessing, and Jacob then defeated Isaac in regards to that situation. And you see the same thing with Laban, where he gave him the sheep and these goats, and he took something that he had, he gave it to Jacob, and he gave Jacob the power. And so essentially he kind of defeated himself. But we know in that situation the Lord was with him. So we see these situations where people are defeating themselves. And it happens more than you realize. Notice in Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, it says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me. To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." And so, essentially, Jesus, now we're going to look at the situation. I hope this makes sense, because I'm utilizing a lot of examples so you can understand. Jesus had power with men and prevailed. He overcame. But how did he overcome? Well, man had power over death, physical death. And so what did they do? They hung him on the cross. They had the power to do that. But what they did was they took something, and I'm talking about the world, the devil. He took something, the power that he had, gave it to Jesus, and in the end, what did that do? That gave power over spiritual death, right? So, Satan, the world, however you want to look at that, is they had the power, they put Jesus on the cross. But in a sense, they were essentially giving power, what they had under their control, gave it to Jesus so he could conquer them. So he could conquer Satan. So he would now have the power over spiritual death. And Satan couldn't see that coming. We see that in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. I'm not going to take the time to read that, but it indicates that Jesus did have power over death. But what about us and today? This still happens every day in our lives. You know, today we have power with men and prevail by being meek and allowing them to persecute us. But how is it that, by the way, this is if we handle the situation correctly. Sometimes the devil will get to certain people and they will lose. But if we handle the situation correctly, brethren, we can be all that much more stronger. And so in our situation where people out in the world are persecuting us, they're taking what they have under their control right now. They persecute us. But in reality, what are they doing? We know that the persecution is a characteristic within the Beatitudes, a spiritual characteristic that's going to help us to get to heaven. So in a sense, they are giving us something where in the end, we're going to be victorious if we handle it correctly. They're handing their power over to us, and we're essentially harvesting what they do to us to help us out to attain salvation. And you know, if the world was just, they could win. If the world was just nice to you all the time, you know, and they never persecuted you and you just kind of floated along, where we need persecution, that is a characteristic. You need to have that characteristic. You have to be persecuted. If you're not persecuted, I'm not talking about 24/7, but if you're never persecuted in your life, you really have to question whether or not you're doing something right. But if the world never persecuted you, you know, how would you ever really know? How could you build, you know, if you become victorious in one situation, how are you going to become stronger? You know, the world could win if everyone was nice to us, but that's not the situation. You know, we will be persecuted. And just like Jesus, he was hung on the cross and that power was given to him. So people are essentially taking that power and they're giving it to us. And we can use it in a different way, so to speak. So we have power with them, and so I say power with them. We're taking something that they have, and we're utilizing it so it can benefit ourselves. And in the end, we prevail. We become victorious. Okay. So what we see here is essentially, you know, we're wrestling with God. And we prevail by seeking out these good spiritual gifts that God desires for us to have. We do this while God is testing our faith, and we build our reliance upon him and grow stronger every time that we do that. So, you know, he's testing our faith, and we're wrestling against him, and we become stronger for it. And this helps us to be more equipped for battle, to help fight worldly battles by instilling our faith in the Lord, to help him, to have him help us with the battle, whatever battle that we're fighting. And when we win, we become stronger every time. And so Satan and the rest of the world essentially are helping us to attain victory when we respond in a righteous manner. They're not trying to help us. That's not their intent. Their intent is to go out there and harm us. Their intent is to bring us down. But in the end, because we know how to handle the situation, it's a blessing for us because it really helps us in the end. It's kind of a different way to kind of look at it. I'm not at all trying to insinuate that the world is out there or Satan's out there trying to help us. No, he very much wants us to fall and to sin against the Lord. But in the end, if we handle it righteously, we will prevail. And as I said already, some will go astray in their faith because their faith is not built in the Lord. But they rather relied on their own strength, just as Jacob did in this situation. But let's talk about that for a second, because Jacob did rely on his own strength to wrestle God. I want to ask you, you know, in reality, do you think that we have the power in our own strength to take anything from God that we want? The answer to that is no. We do not have that power. Do you actually believe that Jacob, in his own strength, could truly overcome God by wrestling him? The answer to that is no. He could not have overcome God. Well, why did he overcome God? He did overcome God, but not because of his own strength. I mean, look in verse 32. We see that miraculously, this angel, man, God, you know, however it is, not really clear on that. But in verse 32, that God struck his hip and miraculously made the muscle of the hip atrophy. The muscles are used to stabilize your joints. If it shrinks, then it's going to go out of joint. And that's exactly what he did. So it is clear that when he struck him and he made his hip go out of joint, that he did still have power. I think it was kind of a reminder to remind Jacob that he did not have essentially the power to prevail over him. But I believe that it was through God's grace that he allowed Jacob to win this wrestling match and to prevail over him. But why would God allow him to do that? Well, I think for two reasons. One, because of God's covenant with him that he made while in Bethel. And two, because through God's grace, he desired for Jacob to have these spiritual blessings. Now remember, he did have a right heart. He just didn't go to God in faith. That was the situation that was wrong. He did have a sincerity of heart, though. We saw that through his humility. So now, let's go to the third point of what we can learn from this wrestling match with Jacob and a God. And we can apply these principles to our lives as well. The fact is that being successful in our wrestling match, you know, with God, not against God, but with God, is going to be a difficult task, and it requires diligence. So what is it that, you know, what do we need in order to have success with God in this wrestling match? Well, fear, I think, was one. Now, Jacob had a fear of man, and that led to his lack of faith, but I'm talking about fear of the Lord here. You know, we should have fear over spiritual death, and this essentially should drive us to seek after the good things of God. It involves humility. You may say, well, you know, Jacob, also, we saw that he had some humility because he didn't think of himself at all. And you might think, well, in that wrestling match, there's no way he could have had humility. Well, I can assure you that anytime something like that, when you're completely nervous about something, that you can still be very humble. You know, I don't know any sport where maybe they go up, you know, an individual sport anyway, I'm not sure about team sports, but an individual sport where they don't get nervous about a situation or performing whatever they have to do on an individual basis. I'm sure they're very nervous when they have to do whatever it is that they do for whatever sport you're talking about. But Jacob saw himself as nothing, and he knew that he could not do it without God. This is key. He knew that he needed God, but he didn't have faith in the Lord. He knew that he needed him, but he didn't have faith in it. He knew he could not do without God. So Jacob wrestled with him to receive the blessing, and so he took matters into his own hands. But it takes humility on our part because we know that we are nothing without God as well. And it causes us to seek him more, and helps us to overcome any obstacles to get him. And so, you know, we realize that without God, we are nothing. We need God in our lives. And so we're not going to win any wrestling match unless we have God to help us. You know, we're talking about wrestling with God, seeking after something, being diligent in your quest for whatever good spiritual gift that you're trying to attain. It requires pain as well. It's going to be painful. Jacob had some pain, I'm sure, when that socket came out. It doesn't feel good when your socket comes out of joint. It hurts. So he wrestled, but he continued wrestling with God. And so through pain, there are certain times that we're going to have to deal with the pain. And it may be, you know, to our pride, whatever the situation is. You know, it's not easy to admit our faults whenever it is that we're wrong, but there is always going to be some pain associated with seeking after spiritual gifts, because we're going to have to admit our faults. But it will make us that much stronger. It requires persistence. We see Jacob continue wrestling with God until daybreak. You know, through pain, through whatever, you know, we have to continually persist after God. God wants to know how far you're willing to go to get what you seek after. He wants to know. And so he's willing to test that. And so you're going to have to push. Obstinacy. Right? means hard-headedness. It means you're stubborn, right? Jacob focused on the Lord, and he refused to let the Lord go until the Lord blessed him. And so, in a sense, we need to never let go of the Lord until he blesses us. And faith, talking about faith, Jacob didn't have it, but as I said before, we can learn from other people's mistakes, and we can learn from his mistake, and we can build our faith in the Lord by relying on him to help us win this wrestling match with the Lord. So do you understand why I talk about wrestling? It's not that we're actually physically getting to this wrestling bout with God, that we're angry with God, or anything like that. It's that we're continually persisting after God. We're not giving up. We're continually going through the pain. Whatever it takes that we need to get through to get these good spiritual gifts from God. There are other examples of those who wrestled with God. We see an example with Elisha. We see Elisha in 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 19 through 21, where Elisha became Elijah's servant, and then nothing is really mentioned to him about him again until 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. I said I would read it, but I'm not going to take the time to read it. Basically, the situation was that Elijah told Elisha that the Lord was going to take him. And so he's like, stay here, for the Lord has sought me to go elsewhere. And Elisha tells him, no, I'm going with you. And he does that a couple of times to him. And each time when they go to visit this place, we see that the other prophets came out to Elisha to remind him that you do realize that he's taking your servant, your master away from you today. And he basically tells him, yeah, you know, shut up, I know. You know, he just focused on Elijah. He's focused intently on Elijah, and he's not letting him go, right? And so he constantly going through that situation, and then Elijah finally says, ask, what is it that you want from me? And so he says, I want a double portion of your spirit. And he says, you ask a hard thing. Sometimes the things that we have to ask for, brethren, are hard. They're difficult. But he says, if you see me when I leave in the chariot, it will be so. You'll have a double portion of my spirit. If not, then you're not going to have it. And so they keep walking and talking, and then the chariot comes down, takes him away. And Elisha saw it, and he has the double portion of Elijah's spirit. So we see in that situation that he indeed did wrestle with God for a good spiritual gift, and God was willing to give it to him, but he wanted to know how far Elisha was willing to go to get that gift. He's testing our faith, brethren. And we also see another example of a Canaanite woman. I'll take the time to read this one in Matthew chapter 15 and verse 21. It says, then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out from that region and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. But he answered her not a word. And the disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. And he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she said, yes, Lord, even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. You see, the woman desired something, and she sought diligently after the Lord. And you think about this, you know, the Canaanites were an enemy of the Jews. And so, you know, for you know, her to be going up to a Jew, he completely ignores her at first. And then she keeps persisting. And she comes back and he says, well, it's not good to take something that's going to help the children, the bread that I'm going to give to the children, and give it to a dog. He's basically calling her a dog. It sounds pretty harsh, and you know, I don't know how I'd react to someone calling me a dog, but essentially he could be meaning one or two things here when he says, I'm not going to take the children's bread and give it to the little dogs. He could be saying that he's not going to take what's necessary and precious for life and give it to someone that essentially doesn't care about God's word, or he is saying, you know, referring to the principle of the Jew first and then the Gentiles, because we know that Jesus went to the Jews first. In either of those situations, it doesn't really matter. She persisted in her faith and said, you know, even the dogs eat the crumbs off the master's table. And so what she's saying is simply that I will take whatever little portion you can give me, and whatever you can give me, I'll take. And so he said, great is your faith, and gave her what she desired. There are many more examples in the Bible regarding that, but we're not going to take time to look over all of them. And so, questions I want to ask you is, what are you doing about your faith? Are you actively pursuing God or the things of God the way you should be? How are you spending your time with God while on this earth? You know, there are some things in this world that are hard to overcome. But brethren, you have to be willing to wrestle with God and to seek after the good gifts if you're going to be successful. You know, I know in a situation that, you know, I think some brethren here are having difficulty finding a job maybe, or, you know, quitting, trying to quit to do something. If all we do, though, is we pray, you know, once a day for like 2 minutes, you know, and expect God to produce results, you're not going to get what you desire. He wants you to wrestle with Him and to constantly, diligently seek after Him. So we can learn something from Jacob here. So what is it that you're doing about your situation, about the spiritual gifts that you need? What are you doing about it? If you're not wrestling God, then you're simply not doing enough. And so wrestling God is a sure sign of our faith. So brethren, you know, I'll leave you with that. If you're not a Christian this morning, and if you'd like to become baptized, we can do that. Or if you have anything that maybe you need to work on, maybe the brethren here can help and pray for you in regards to that. Whatever means we can assist you this morning, you can do so by coming right now as we stand and sing.